Welcome to the Intuition Conversations. My name is Megan Field. I'm an intersectional social justice activist, an intuitive embodiment facilitator, a Koya teacher, a licensed practical magic coach, and an Irish Celtic moon manah practitioner. I'm a Gemini polymath with an insatiable passion for learning, empowerment, and connecting people to others, and most importantly, to themselves. Each week, I will be exploring topics around intuition, how to connect with and trust your internal GPS, that inner compass, which is a sacred container of all your innate wisdom and power. This podcast is an opportunity to pool knowledge from a wide range of amazing people and practitioners and bring together a worldwide community of intuitive souls. I'm so excited to share the wisdom in today's episode with you. So let's get on with the show. Hello and welcome to the Intuition Conversations. I'm here with Alice Grist, who I had the pleasure of meeting in person after following you for quite some time at Wild Woman Camp earlier this month. We're in July 2022. Oh gosh, Alice, you are again one of these multimodal women that I have on the podcast. So let me tell a little bit about Alice. So Alice is an author of books. So you've written Dirty and Divine and The Book of Tarot. You are also the author of a tarot deck, the Cosmic Mother Tarot deck, and another one that's coming out later this year, which I'm very excited about. You are the founder and facilitator of the Cosmic Sisterhood Membership Circle. You are an incredibly gifted tarot reader. You offer one-to-one readings, full moon readings. You make YouTube videos about tarot. You do so much. You're so generous with your skills on Instagram as well. You have courses like the one you're running this month, which is a month of tarot online. You do tarot for businesswomen, so entrepreneurial coaching, like amazing. I just don't know what you don't do around tarot. And I'm so excited to talk to you today about tarot as a tool for intuition. And really, like, you're a gifted writer, a beautiful speaker, and you have a wonderful way of sharing your knowledge. And so I'm really grateful you're here on the podcast, and I can't wait to speak with you. So welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you, Megan. Lovely to be here.
And so Alice, I'd love for you to tell us about yourself and your work in your own words. So how are you showing up in the world today, and what are you all about?
Okay, well, I'm Alice, and you say that you don't know what I don't do with regards to tarot. Well, I'll tell you one thing that I don't do. I don't do prediction. And I'm not that mad keen on love life stuff either, because I feel like that pulls on to too many other people's emotions. So that's what I don't do with regards to tarot, because we all have our own power. And when we get lost in either of those two things, we lose it nearly immediately. But for a little bit of a background, so I was born to a father and mother, and but my dad was a vicar, a Church of England vicar. For the first like 7 or 8 years of my life, we lived next to the vicarage. So I had this really early education in some form of divinity, which felt really magical actually as a child. But after my parents divorced, my mom was gay, so she was with a woman. So, you know, there's a lot of a feminist perspective that I gained from a really young age. But also my dad then went and kind of wandered the realms of faith and came up with the fact that he was no longer a vicar, he was going to be a white witch, which in the 80s was quite the shocker. when I got a little bit older, I guess a young teenager, I'd go hang out there at weekends. It was amazing, with all these goths and hippies and really cool people who just saw the world in a very, very different way. And my dad kind of gave me this education about spirituality, reincarnation, energy, healing, meditation, and of course tarot. Tarot being the thing that I mean I've continued doing all of those things, all of them, and still do, but it's tarot that for many years, maybe the past 10 years, people keep saying to me, you need to pursue the tarot, you need to pursue the tarot. And I was doing it, you know, I had clients, but I just wasn't pushing it to the extent that I was. So I, like, you know, maybe, oh gosh, 12 years or so ago, I started writing about spirituality, and I wrote a couple of books, The High Heel Guide to Spiritual Living, The High Heel Guide to Enlightenment. I just wanted to kind of be jack of all trades. I just wanted to talk about spirituality and my perspectives on it, my experiences in particular. But I kept getting pulled back to tarot over and over and over again, and actually eventually kind of gave over to that path and realized that there is so much within that, because you're looking at the entireties of lives and the symbolisms of life, and it's never ever gets boring. And I've worked through the tarot cards in so many ways now. You know, I've created two decks, two different books. Each time you're going through the tarot and going through each and every card, and it evolves every time. So if you were to look at my books, you know, the card meanings are never static. And that's one of the things I think puts people off about tarot. They think they need to know a very specific meaning. But actually the tarot grows alongside us. As it will continue to do, I'm sure, in my future work. But yeah, it's a trip. I love it. So that's me in a nutshell. Oh, and I'm a mom. I have two daughters, two cats, a dog, a tortoise, and a husband. So that's me.
In that order. No, just kidding.
Yeah, no, yeah.
Well, thank you so much for a bit of background. And I think we'll probably come back maybe to some of your family a little bit later in the conversation. But I love what you said of like tarot being this live thing, that it's not static, that like tarot grows as you grow. Like, we're not static individuals. So the Alice that was exploring tarot at like 16, 17 around her dad and her dad's mates is definitely not the same Alice as exploring it now. And you, the Alice that you are now won't be the same as in a year when you're, you know, I think tarot and like oracle cards and all sorts of like spirituality, with meditation, you know, Koya, you meet it where you are and it meets you where you are. And that changes. That's a very fluid thing, which is amazing. So Alice, what does intuition mean to you? How would you describe it generally?
I guess intuition is getting into alignment with yourself. And again, that's another thing that's not fluid. So if you'd have asked me 10 years ago, I'd have said, well, intuition is this inner voice, this inner knowing, which it is. But I think for you to marry up with that inner voice is the real goal, because that inner voice should at some point become the outer voice, the external voice, the actuality of who you are, the full totality, which is hard work. And you can get there at times and then slip away from it. You know, I find as a woman, hormonally, I slip away from it maybe once a month, or when I'm tired or hungry, I slip away from that actuality of my intuition. But my intuition is my truth, it's my authenticity. And when you're in that place, you listen to how you really feel about things. So you turn up in a room and you hear what your heart has to say about the circumstances and the people, or how you feel about going to a place, or what it is you should be eating or drinking, or, you know, instead of always second guessing yourself or applying somebody else's opinion or going along with what culture suggests you ought to. So intuition is actually the inner, ultimate sort of soul crystallized truth of yourself.
I love that. And what I also love is the, like, I've, you know, it's never really come up before, that that intuition is really this this alignment of your inner world, that inner wisdom, and your outer action. And that, you know, and that to like acting, it's sort of like listening and acting on your intuition are really when that kind of like when all parts of you come into, you know, come together and weave together. And that, like you said, like there's a lot that can take us away from that. And what I'd love to hear is sort of a little bit more about your journey with intuition and maybe where tarot comes into that. And how have you learned over, or like, you know, what practices have you engaged to bring that alignment to, first of all, listen to, like, hear it, listen to it, and then bring that alignment to your intuition forward? I'd love to hear about your experiences.
I think the most simplistic way that I have done that is taking the dog for walks. Having a dog has changed my life. Little nuisance that he is. However, yeah, I definitely think being in nature is, it sounds really trite, doesn't it? Really cliche, but there is something about connecting with the rhythms and the seasons and the energy of the different elements, and like really connecting with them on a daily basis that is utterly transformative. Other things would be prayer in times of need. And that prayer doesn't mean kind of getting down on your knees next to the side of the bed before you go to sleep. It's just having a little word with your God, goddess, whatever, in your head as and when you need to. I think that's really powerful. Choosing to hold belief in something other than what is present and what you can see and feel, is so powerful, believing in your own evidence and following that evidence as it arises. So when I say evidence, I mean, you know, like everybody listening to this will have had some kind of spiritual experience that's brought them to this moment, where even if that's just hope, you know, a hope in something more, it's allowing yourself to have that evidence and to honor it. You know, honor how you feel when you gaze upon a beautiful tree or a beautiful sky, or some thought rumbles up from nowhere and it feels like it brings emotion or power. I think it's really, it's such a big question actually, because it touches on all of our areas of life. And one of the things with my work is I really want to bring it down to a gritty everyday level, because, you know, not everybody can do all the things we're supposed to do to be spiritual. You know, not everybody can commit to all of those tick box list things, whether it's climbing a mountain or changing their diet entirely or whatever, whatever the current fad happens to be. I think that, and particularly for women who are very much mired in domesticity, even now, and I'm sure no woman would be surprised to hear that, we're very much in the motherhood, in the family home, in the home, in, you know, even if you're in a career, it's in that day-to-day grit. I think the spirituality within all of that. So the tarot in particular kind of helped guide us through. They connect with that intuitive aspect, that glimmer of soul that is within us that sometimes we lose track of, like all too easily lose track of it. But the tarot kind of steers us back over and over again to this alignment, to this authentic truth. So no matter how far we might wander, the tarot cards will be like, hey up love, come on back this way, you know.
Can you recall any time, well, like maybe even recently in your life, where that's been the case for you, or maybe, you know, someone that you've been working with, now keeping confidentiality, but it, like have you seen that, have you experienced that yourself, and you know, do you see that happen often, you know?
Oh
that
my God. Yeah, I did it last week. I think I was really tired, I was not very well. The beautiful Wild Woman Festival, I think, got the best of me energetically wise. And I drank too much coffee. You know, all the things that are quite simple, quite easily done, and probably moving in, you know, I'm going to be 44 this year, so moving in towards perimenopause and stuff like that, and being sort of slightly hormonal, I lost my radar completely. And this is it a funny story? It didn't feel like a funny story at the time. But I gave my daughter some grapes to eat before she, like as a bedtime snack. And I left her with these grapes in her room. And then I went into the room later after she'd gone to sleep, and there was a plate on the side that was completely empty, but I knew she hadn't eaten the grapes. So I immediately decided the dog had eaten the grapes, and absolutely what kind of went mentalistic, just went crazy on the whole thing. And I didn't stop, I didn't take a breath, I didn't think, okay, what's the bigger picture here? I didn't look for the blooming grapes, you know. I just was like, right, the dog's eaten them, I've got to go. So I ended up having a very expensive trip 2 counties away to the out of hours vets to get the dog to throw up, which cost me nearly £300 in dog vomit, and he hadn't eaten the grapes. And when I came home, I realized that the grapes were on a shelf just above where I'd seen the other plate, where I had put them out of his way. And then I vaguely remembered doing it. And it's like, okay. And it was such a lesson. I thought, you know what? This is, luckily the insurance stumped up. But other than that, I thought, okay, so the excess that I've paid for this dog vomit, very expensive dog sick and a very tiring journey, it's better than any therapy, and about the equivalent price, really, of a good couple of sessions of therapy, in that, you know, I should have stopped, I should have paused. Of course I know better. There you go. He's there barking along with me. But yeah, it just, it was one of those moments, one of those flash in the pan, kind of saw red, what do I do? Panic, run around like a maniac to get it sorted, get it fixed, because I'm the woman, I'm the heart of the home, I need to make everybody well, without actually pausing to check in on myself and kind of go, okay, is this really what's happened? And all the way driving to blooming Kettering, which is far away, I kept thinking, now maybe I did something with those grapes, maybe I did something with those grapes. And so I knew at that point the intuition was kicking in, but I couldn't for the life of me remember, because I'd let myself get too tired, too, you know, kind of worn out, running around like a, you know, crazy lady. So that's an example of how I guess everyday life can kind of really get the better of us.
I think that's so interesting. That you know, you were too tired, too busy, which we can all relate to, right? That you forgot that you had done the protection thing, right? And I've always said that for me and for a lot of people, it's like leaving the hair straighteners on.
Yes,
so we are so busy. Our minds are so occupied and our bodies like actually physically do something, make an action, shut off a hair straightener, move a plate of grapes, click off the plug at the wall. We do it, but we're consumed by so much other stuff that we forget that we do these almost automatic actions with our body. And so it's, I really, really relate to that. And sometimes there are 300-pound lessons, you know, I've been halfway up for like a training day in Hertfordshire and like convinced myself that my house was burning down. And I, you know, doubled back, you know, adding 2 hours to my journey in traffic from to Surrey. And it's, you know, and it's really interesting that like, it's those reminders again, that sometimes like, you know, that all of that mind noise can get in the way of that connection to our bodies and to intuition. And then hopefully like when we kind of spiral back in our learning that like the next time things start to get a little bit busy, a little bit full, a little bit loud in our brains, that we're like, oh yeah, I remember what happened that last time. I don't want to go to the vet again, or I don't want, you know, so, you know, sometimes our intuition will help us remember and bring us back to it as well. So yeah, I'd love to hear. So, you know, in other situations, like how does tarot fit into that? So like, can tarot bring you back to yourself as well?
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. I mean, there's a sort of, it's not a very similar situation, but it feels like one sort of in my mind, it's just sprung to mind, is when my husband had a heart attack, bless his heart. He'd been, you know, having various chest pains for quite a few months and been to hospitals, had ambulances out, consistently being told there was nothing wrong, it was just stress. But he had these chest pains from 4 a.m. till about 6 p.m. And I was like, I'm sorry, but you have got to go to the hospital now, and maybe you'll be sat there all night and maybe it'd be a waste of time, but let's do this. So I took him to the hospital and got a phone call not long after I'd got back home, because I just dropped him off because I could get home, put the kids to bed, saying that he was possibly going into cardiac arrest, and that they were taking him to the heart hospital, after which there was no communication. So that was one of those times where I could have really, you know, far, far worse than the dog eating grapes, potentially. It, you know, the seriousness of it and the fact that I was still running around. I remember going, my daughter, who was 4 at the time, was like, can I have a sandwich, mommy? And I was like, yes, of course you can. You know, putting on the happy face, everything's fine, when actually, you know, for all I knew, everything was crumbling around, really, like, terrifically crumbling to the ground. And it was in that moment that instead of panicking like I did with grapes, I went and took a moment to myself and I took a tarot card, and I wasn't sure if I really wanted to know what I was going to get, because even though I've been working with tarot and I understand after 30 years of working with them that they're very gentle, that there was still that fear within me that, you know, what if I get the death card or something like that. But I actually got the star card, and it brought me completely to a place of just calm, just like, this is going to be okay. Whatever happens, this is going to be okay. And it kind of allowed me to take that in breath and like settle and calm and organize things, not from that place of whirlwind panic, but from a place of inner peace, really, and trust. And that has proven to be true and to come about through a very difficult journey of recovery and all kinds. But the card is a challenging card, but it's also one of empowerment, I would say.
I love those. Well, neither one of those stories, they both sound very, very stressful, not gonna lie, but thank you for sharing them as an illustration of, you know, of the ways that, you know, that those, the tools that we have can bring us back to ourselves, even in really difficult moments. And I was wondering, you've brought up a few things. Like when we started the conversation, you say like what you don't do with tarot. And, you know, you've mentioned the sort of like that tarot has a bit of myth around it, a little bit of a stigma of being harsh or, you know, or prescriptive. And so I wonder if you could talk to us a little bit about what tarot is, and maybe break down some of those, I guess, maybe some common misconceptions about what tarot is and how you can use it as a tool of intuition.
Yeah, I mean, for me, tarot is a connection to a symbolic understanding, a spiritual symbolic understanding that we had before we had language that is within each of us. It's a way to understand that intuitive, soul-filled part, our psychic part. I don't like to use the word psychic because it sounds like some kind of mysterious thing that only certain people are good at. But for me, we all have that ability. And I also think psychic makes it sound like some kind of supernatural thing when I think it is just utterly natural. We all have this connection to understandings within ourselves, and the tarot presents catalyst and prompt towards that. And that's how I teach people to read and how I read myself. There's many books you can buy, particularly the older ones, where it's very prescriptive, very, you know, kind of schoolyard kind of, this is what this card means. And it's very specific. And actually, there's too much going on in life for the meanings to be that specific. It doesn't make sense. There's only 78 cards and there's a million different things that could happen. So I think for me, tarot is about allowing ourselves to explore that inner metaphor and the way that we like to, you know, understand the world creatively, like how an artist creates or music, you know, they all come at the same, you know, heartbreak, for example, can be explored in a million different songs and a million different pieces of art and a million different books. And tarot kind of are another exploration of all these different amazing archetypal situations that we might find ourselves in, as well as the nitty-gritty ones, constantly leading us back to ourselves, constantly leading us to the highest possible understandings that we can have at any minute. So it's not necessarily even about the taking us to the best life. It's the best life we could have at this current moment in time, and then gently prodding and poking us towards that authenticity. And then from there, anything does become possible. You can manifest and create and grow. But I think the first job most people will find when they pick up tarot is they'll be prodded and pushed into their authenticity. And for me, it's become a tool of reflection, sometimes very deeply annoying reflection, the things you don't want to know about yourself. And that's why people often maybe pick up their angel cards or oracle cards as opposed to tarot. And, you know, tarot do have a bad reputation. There's lots and lots of reasons for that, partly I think because Hollywood just glamorized the kind of them as this kind of tool of the occult. There's also the fact that they were very much used by Romani women at a time when Romani women were deeply oppressed and you know, kind of stigmatized, and therefore the tarot have been kind of put within that stigmatization, which is foul because those women used those cards to provide for their family when nobody else would employ them. And I think it's always important to mention that. But yeah, and I guess the church has stigmatized them, and women in the 60s and 70s were starting to pick up cards, and there was a lot of myths put into place around them not being able to, or you can only use cards if you come from certain descendants or somebody else gives you the cards. It's all blockages, block to stop people from actually, you know, kind of facilitating their own empowerment.
Yeah, that's a really interesting way to look at it. I didn't know that about the Romani history of tarot. I knew that, like, you know, tarot hasn't been around for ages and ages, but it's been around since is it 16th or 17th century, or is it even earlier than that?
14th century. It's okay. All a bit unclear. And it started off as a game in Turkey or Italy. And then it's debatable, isn't it, whether that game was intentionally a form of divination or not. It's really not clear, but I would say that whether it was or wasn't, there is a huge amount of divine kind of imagery and symbols within those cards that certainly does pick up on things that most people can relate to.
And I think, I, you know, this kind of goes with a lot of themes of a lot of what come up in a lot of the podcast episodes is that, you know, there's so much that blocks our intuition, right? And part of that is the sort of the cultural conditioning that we face, right? And as you describe that, you know, the use of tarot has been, you know, there's been a lot of rules put onto it. There's been a lot of stigma around it. And when you look at all of that, you know, if you, the flip side of it, that is, that tarot is a tool for empowerment, that tarot is a tool towards inner knowing and inner wisdom and authenticity. You can see why, you know, the powers that be wanted to, you know, distance people and separate people from it, because, you know, no one benefits more than like church and state from complicity and numbness and people not taking responsibility for themselves and empowering themselves and thinking for themselves as well. And I really think that, like, even when I've received tarot readings, and like every year I go on a pilgrimage back when I go home to Boston, I go to Salem, Massachusetts, usually with my sister, Erin, and the two of us get our cards read. We go to different places. There is about 20, probably, there's probably more than 50 readers in Salem, Massachusetts. And we always go, we go to different ones every time just to see, you know, to change it up. And it's, even when I've had the cards read for me in Salem, there's, I can just, if I like think of the feeling in my body of all of those readings, it's this deep yes, like, turning over cards, asking me questions, sharing some information based on, you know, what the what imagery might be coming up in the cards. Like everything that's been reflected back to me has been like, yeah, yes, uh-huh, yeah, that's true. And you know, starting with the questions that I ask and then ask more questions, it feels like, you know, I've, you know, tarot, you know, for me, I was like, oh, there are cards being read for me. And actually it feels very much like a conversation between me, the cards, the divine, and the person who's facilitating that space.
Middleman or middle woman. Yeah.
Exactly. And I love that about, you know, I love that about tarot. Cause like there is a little bit, like when I first started to have readings, there's a little bit about like, I'm just going to sit back. Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Universe, you do that. Universe and tarot reader, you do the work. I'm just going to sit back. You just tell me the future. Right. And I think that's one of the, you know, that's one of the misconceptions about tarot is that like you have these people who are divinely gifted, who are psychic, as you said, who will sit down and like tell you about what's going to happen. And, you know, that's actually not been my experience at all with my own reading of tarot and also being read for. It's been very much an intuitive conversation between the cards, myself, and that person holding space.
Yeah, it's like a co-creation. And in fact, that's something, you know, like I said, my tarot understandings have grown. And I don't know, over the past year, that seems to be the direction my tarot work is going in. You know, I have clients, of course I do, who I just read for, but I think I'm definitely leaning more towards the conversation, the talking, hosting workshops, which I'm going to call Talking Tarot, which are basically giving women the cards and facilitating that kind of connection between themselves, the friends, the other people within the room, because it's absolutely magical.
And I witnessed that at Wild Women Camp, where you shared out a bunch of decks from all different, you know, I guess all different time periods and lineages and imagery and symbolism, and really encouraged us all, you know, individually and in pairs or small groups to start playing around with the cards and starting with, like, before picking up any guidebook, before, like, before you would come over and maybe give us, like, you know, oh, well, you know, you could look for this or that in there. It was about, what are you feeling into this? Like, what are you seeing? What is your perception of this card, and what's your reading of this card as you receive it? And if that's like, that is inherently empowering, just basically have a card in front of you that, you know, may, you know, someone else, many other people could interpret lots of different ways, but ultimately, what does this say about your heart? How is this holding up a mirror into the contents of your heart, into the contents of your intuition? Like, how is intuition whispering to you through this card? And I think that, you know, it, you did a beautiful job at like really helping everyone in that space, like, begin or deepen their trust in themselves and their trust in their reading of themselves through the cards. So yeah, I don't know if you want to talk more about that, but I think that's a real gift to help people learn how to use these cards as a tool of empowerment and intuition.
I mean, yeah, that's the thing. I love listening to what other people make of the cards, and I will never tell anyone that they're wrong, because who am I to say that? I've kind of looked at the cards for 30 years and managed to, you know, Fandango my way to a kind of understanding of what each one means out of the experiences of my own life. And therefore I hand them to the people and say, experience them for yourselves and you tell me what it means. And actually listening to other people's perceptions is beautiful. And people are, you know, they're often on the money that, you know, they'll have a kind of general understanding of what that card means just by looking at it in a more traditional way. But they'll also then apply that to their personal experiences and circumstances. And it's just beautiful to see people kind of realize that this card that they've pulled just for the sake of pulling one card is speaking so loudly to their hearts and to the question in their hearts. It's just, yeah, it's divine experience to share them in this way, particularly when I've been working in a bit of a silo for a long time. And, you know, I can tell you what the cards mean. Of course I can. It's so much more fun to hear you tell me.
I think, you know, there's something, you know, I think one of the differentiators of tarot is sort of the structure of it. And if you want to, if you could talk to us about, I'm going to ask you a two-part question. If you could talk to us a little bit about the structure of tarot. So like what makes tarot, tarot, and then also what differentiates different tarot decks. And for me, I think it has a lot to do with the imagery. Mm-hmm. So if you, I'd love to hear about the structure and then also about the role of imagery in the creation of tarot decks, and maybe in particular in the tarot decks that you have created.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, so a tarot deck is 78 cards, 22 of which are called the major arcana, which go from, they're the ones that people will have heard of. So the Fool, the Hanged Man, Death, the Sun, Judgment, the Chariot, you know, there's a whole 22 of them, which are basically the big themes of life that everybody will experience at some point. You won't, you know, when you pick up a tarot deck, some of those are going to feel a little bit alien, but you, if you stick with your tarot for the rest of your life, at some point they're going to show up and you'll be like, ah, now I get that card. You know, there's a few like Judgment. I sat with that the last few years and really got a better understanding of it than ever before. And people have that, you know, where they don't get a card until they have to live through it, then you'll know. But yeah, so these are all these major archetypes and characters, which are beautiful. And you can work with just the majors alone, which can be really empowering if you want, you know, if you're asking big scale questions. But then we have the minor arcana. So they're like 56 cards, but they're set in four suits. So we have the wands, which are like energy and fire. We have the swords, which are the mind, logic, and air. We have the cups, which are water and emotion. And we have the pentacles, coins, which are earth and the material world, work, things like that. So actually, even when you just break them down like that, you start to get your understandings. And kind of can relate something in your head. So like, say you do a little spread and you get a pentacle, you can think, okay, so this relates to work. And then you look at the image and you think, what's the, you know, look at it like a comic book. If it was just, you know, one square in a comic book, what's happening within that particular part of the story and how does that relate to where you're at? But the other part of your question, so the different decks, well, I mean, I've created two now. And I have many, not loads and loads. I know some people have like hundreds. I've got probably about 10 and probably about three that I have on rotation that I use all the time. And yeah, the symbols are different. The art's different. You have to pick a deck that really works for you, that you feel like you can interpret, that feels like it's got stories upon it that you like to sit with, the colors, the energy, the feel, the vibe. You know, don't wait for somebody else to buy you a deck, because when they do, it's probably not going to be one that you're really liking. And certainly don't go for one that's just fashionable or trendy or you've seen on Instagram. You've got to really investigate your deck. There's 78 images on there, and just because you like one image doesn't necessarily mean you'll like the other 77. And you know, there's so many, there's like loads of independent creators out there now, so you can get decks on all kinds of themes. I know when I created my decks for my first deck, the Cosmic Mother Tarot, I didn't create it to print it. I created it because I'd just had a baby, and myself and my four-year-old were trying to do something together. I was on maternity leave, she wasn't at school yet, and the baby was like slept all the time. It was unheard of. So while she was sleeping, I said, let's paint a tarot deck, just as like an offhand thing to do. not thinking we'd get very far, bearing in mind she was a very small child. But she sat and she painted all 78 cards with me whilst the baby slept over a period of, I guess, months. And so that was how they were born. So there's a story there. And obviously then the artwork is infused with, it's quite childlike. And there are little nods to things like there's one of the cards, the Princess of Swords is one that Ivy painted herself, like completely. And it's very Elsa from Frozen vibes. But I love it because that's a story in and of itself. You know, if you know anything about Frozen or, you know, or want to go watch that film, then you'll know a little bit about that card, or any kind of Ice Queen imagery and storyline. And you can do that with the cards. You can see a character upon it, even if that's not intentional by the artist, and infuse it with meaning. So the more recent deck, Rebel Heart, that's coming out in December, was again a completely different experience. I worked with an artist based in Wales, Nikki Cotton, and we did honestly most of the cards by voice notes, but again they're infused with our domesticity, with pictures of my kids, me, her kids, our cats, our dogs. You know, that we didn't have a budget to kind of paper models, so everything within those cards is, it's like a collage effect, and it's all based on stuff within our remit, within our houses at that point in time, not long after lockdowns. And the friendship that we built up as well, I'm sure, is infused, and there's humor in those cards. So I can only really tell you about those cards, but other decks that I like them because maybe there's something in them that feels passionate or exciting, or I just like the imagery.
I mean, I've heard a few other deck, you know, through a course I took through Hay House. I've heard a few other tarotists and deck designers talk about their journeys. And particularly with tarot, there's something really interesting on both sides, and like in the creation and in the choosing, that, you know, in the creation of it, there seems to be something that really comes through that reflects the designers or the artists, like their experience of the world, and that gets infused into the deck. Yeah. And then the way that decks tend to be chosen by people like myself included is like, do I have resonance with the imagery and the symbolism and some of the stories that that artist and that designer is sharing? And so when you were like, oh yeah, this next deck is very, you know, there's a bit of feminism, I'm like, I'm on it, I'm buying it, I don't even want to see the images, I love it. Like that resonates with my heart and my experience. And and you know, the decks that I've kind of like migrated to are often ones that are like really representative of lots of people's experiences and identities, and you know, that really reflects my values and passion around social justice. So like those are the kind of decks that I choose, and I tend to like move away from the more old fashioned ones.
Well, they're very white. I mean, you pick up and you're like, right away, everybody's white.
It wasn't the art designed by a Black woman.
Yeah, I believe she was.
Yeah. And the two white guys took credit for all of her work.
Yeah. I'm not a big fan of the Rider Waite deck anyway. I've never used it. Ever. I bought one deck once as for training purposes, and I won't bother anymore. I'd use my own now, of course. But you know, it's the representation is so important. That was something that me and Nikki really talked about and really worked with as much as we possibly could, because it's so we want, you know, they're infused with our lives, but we wanted them to be something more than that too, you know, something much more. And we're very conscious of both white women, you know, kind of in the UK, but tarot is everybody. They're heavily woman focused though.
And I think that's the dance, right, of reflecting your experience, but also offering something out into the world that's going to resonate and be reflective of, you know, other people's experiences as well. And I think that's I think collaboration is a beautiful thing. And I love the way you've collaborated with your daughter and now with Nikki. And I think it's really amazing. And I have a question for you about spreads. So talk to me about some of your favorite spreads. And so like, maybe like, again, just for if someone's completely new to tarot, and also someone who's like, oh, I'm looking for a new spread. Like, I do tarot all the time. Tell me a new one, Alice.
Okay. So I'll tell you some of my secrets. Well, they're not really my secrets. I mean, but I'll tell you, I did make a spread up, which I'll tell you about, I made loads up now, but one of the first ones that I made up, I call the bridge, but I'll come to that in a minute. So the easiest spread you can do is like three cards, and you can you know, so easy, just put them in a line like that. I very rarely use anything other than three cards, because anything more than that, it's, you don't need it. You don't need it. Once you get talking, those three cards can contain an hour's worth of significant conversation and insight. But then there's other, like there's the bridges. So you have three cards across the top. This is where you're at now. And then I do three cards along the bottom, which is where you would like to be in your highest potential at this moment. And then the three cards in the middle represent how you get there. So I always think that's quite a fun one to do. I do that one quite a bit as well for myself and for clients. But the simpler, the better. I think there's a lot of kind of complicated spreads out there, which can be really fun on occasion. But I think save them for either when you're in a real bind or a pickle in life and you want something bigger, or maybe, you know, your birthday or the new year. But the rest of the time, there's nothing up with one or three card spreads. Just keep it simple and keep it, you know, why overcomplicate things?
I suppose in that bridge, you could do three cards, like one for now, one for where you'd like to be, and then how you get there. You know, I love that. And I think that's, you know, sometimes, you know, you might, you know, I'd let them talk for my, but sometimes like I would get stuck. Like I'd pick up a deck and I'd be like, oh, I don't know what I want to ask. I don't have any like big burning questions. And I think that is, you know, that's like keeping it, you know, that's big, like now where you want to be and how you get there. Those are some big questions. But I think that, you know, that I think that's, you know, you said a lot about sort of, you know, archetypes and archetypal imagery and energy. And I think that sort of those questions are, isn't that at the heart of what most people are asking most of the time in their lives and have been for millennia, right? Like, you know, like, how am I feeling now? Like, where do I want to go? How do I get there? Like, that's
one of the best things you can ask tarot is something like, what am I not seeing? What am I not seeing about this situation, this relationship, this job, this, how I feel? What am I not seeing? What do I need to know?
Yeah.
Just simple like that. Throw it out to Mother Earth, let her respond with, you know, without kind of putting too much of your own perspective on that.
And I suppose then, like, you know, if you're reading on your own, right? Like sometimes I do this in like, that's pretty much my question for, if I'm pulling a card in the morning, I'm asking, what do I need to know today? And it's like, whatever card turns over is, you know, it's like, you know, that's the energy of the deck. That's what, you know, a lot of things, a lot of shuffling, a lot of energy has like conversed to like show me that card. But then it's my intuition who's talking to me in that reading, right? It's like, it's, you know, so, you know, that's the way I do it. You know, I'm not clairvoyant. I don't hear anything. The only thing I hear is I feel like it rises up from my belly, maybe connected to the earth. And then it's like, oh, that's what I need to know today. Thank you.
Yeah. It's a really good way to bring that internal understanding, which honestly, you already know, to bring it to the surface. And when I'm reading for people, they're sat there nodding, because they already know. And they'll be like, that's weird. I was just talking to my friend about this last week. So they know it. They've even vocalized it. They just haven't kind of consciously really examined it. You know, and it's affirmation over and over and over again.
So Alice, you've mentioned your family, mm-hmm. you know, your children and your folks, and I was wondering if you you know, want to talk a little bit more about them, or who your teachers have been, who have you learned from around your connection to intuition and around your it seems like a lifetime of exploration of tarot.
Yeah, I mean, obviously my dad and his wife in the first instance were very much there with all the information and the people and the spiritual gang, which got me thinking. But I think I almost don't think in terms of teachers. I think in terms of lessons and moments and those things that have been said or that have happened. I remember once after I started writing my first books and I was over in America and I was with my uncle on his farm. He has this really, it's not a farm as in his land. He's basically his land that he keeps and hangs out on. And he was asking me about the book and the spiritual book I was writing at the time. And he was just like, I can't remember. He just sort of gestured to everything around us. And he was like, this is my church. This is my God. And that was the big, that it sits with me, it just stays with me, and it's becoming what my God is these days. So I guess he played a role there. And then, you know, kids, they do definitely, they're constant teachers, but more not on a spiritual path, more on a practical, who the hell am I and how do I shake off all these kind of cultural familial expectations and become the person I want to be for me and them. That's always a big teacher. My relationship with my husband is definitely a teaching and learning experience, I think, for us both, back and forth, and always has been. More so in the past 10 years, but I'm hoping it's reaching a nice easy plateau. And yeah, I mean, I've trained with people and I've had spiritual teachers who have been wonderful, but I think the biggest ones are those moments and being in nature and being with animals and reflecting on the signs around me. And animals actually, and nature tends to bring me a lot of information and understandings when I open myself up to those things.
But one of the first podcast interviews I did was with Liz Dean, who also has written books on tarot and has written a book about I think it's called Nature's Oracles, and being open to seeing the symbols in nature. And I think that, you know, that's a really interesting connection, like to being open to seeing the symbols and the metaphor in a tarot card and looking at the world around you and being open to seeing like the whole of nature around you as a big tarot, right? Like
The whole world is a big tarot card. Basically now, you know, 30 years in, I see everything in symbols, and not consciously, I don't go around looking at people thinking, right, who is she today, or what does this mean to me? But it's just there, it's like innate, it's within me. So that, you know, and particularly just being out in nature, I find things happening and it means something, and it means something to me. And it, you know, I find four leaf clovers all the time. This is something that my family have begun to just think is a normal thing. But I find patches of them, and I find them all, and I never look for them, Megan, ever. They just appear in my eyeline. So for me, that's become a teacher, the four leaf clover. And my daughter, my youngest daughter, is called Clover, again, not consciously, but not linked in that way, but they are just everywhere, and they follow me and I find me, and I'm still not entirely sure what they are, but I know their affirmation and they feel like I'm on the right path. And they always tend to come when I've either had a really good thought or I've said something aloud that is meaningful to me and my life at that moment, or when I've realized something. And then there is the four leaf clover in my eye line.
One of those. That is amazing. I mean, in like the Irish Celtic tradition, like that is a symbol of like prosperity, of abundance, of luck, of like, of literally like being on the right path. And it's, you know, it's being open to seeing them, because you could be in your phone, right? You could be distracted. Running, you could
jog in with the dog. That's when I tend to find, the other day, last in my garden, I had one last week, which I've never had one so close to. I found them on the street, I found them in the fields. But I was just bringing the washing in and I dropped a peg. And when I picked the peg up, there was one right next to it. So they arise for me. But like I say, since forever, since I was a child, but I've never looked for them. And when I do look for them, I don't find them. So yeah.
Lesson in there about ease as well.
Yeah.
and taking you back to what you said at the beginning, that, you know, intuition is that alignment of inner world and outer action. Can you, like, I would think that like that alignment is one of the benefits of connecting to intuition, like being in alignment with yourself feels, you know, for me, feels really good in my body. And I was wondering if you could speak about like the benefits of intuition and any times where you felt that inner and outer alignment of like your intuition has spoken to you, and then you've been like, okay, now I'm going to take action on it. And, you know, and maybe it was something small, maybe it was something big, maybe it felt a little bit scary at the time, but looking back, you're like, of course, intuition had my back. So yeah,
I mean, intuition is, gosh, yeah, it shows up all the time in all the ways, and we battle it down. I'm thinking of an example. I mean, I woke up the other morning with the idea, like, well, maybe a month or so ago, with the full idea for an entire book in my head. I hadn't dreamt it was just there when I woke up, and this was a book I'd been battling to write for a year but hadn't been able to and had literally just given up on. And that just aligned and came up and was there. It's like these bubbles of sudden knowing. It's like, how did I not realize how simple this was going to be? Or, you know, how just following it to places that feel good and that feel right and that feel nourishing. And I think it's there on every level. It's whether you eat the chocolate bar or the apple, you know, your intuition would certainly have something to say about that. If you are, you know, either way can be right or wrong, but it's listening to the intuition and really just following whatever your body needs to be nourished at that moment in time. So yeah, I feel like it's almost like a compass that's always showing you towards true north. And like before coming onto this call with you, I've kind of been with the kids. We've got on summer holidays earlier than everybody else in the world, it seems. So I've had kids around all day. I've had their friends around. It's been nice. But I thought I need to take a walk before I come on to the call with you, just to separate myself from that kind of frenetic, fun, giggly energy and go and walk around the fields that I walk around and just connect, plug in some Mother Earth. And I'm really glad I did. And when I was coming back, you know, my thoughts had already started to ramble and become a bit more highfalutin than who wants a smoothie or whatever it was I was saying to the kids, or stop fighting, or, you know, kind of playing referee. So, yeah, it's that following that guidance, because part of me could have gone, oh, no, I'll just do the walk after I've talked to Megan. And sometimes you don't know what good or bad it brings. I think when you start a spiritual path, you have the more obvious examples of the time I followed my intuition and something great happened. You know, I met my future husband, or I ended up in an amazing job, or I didn't listen to my intuition and I ended up in a really dodgy situation and I wish I did. But I think when you really connect with intuition fully, it's all the little stuff. It's all and just allowing yourself to have that inner experience of your truth. Without it needing to be led by anybody else or anything else, or that big loud voice in your head that feels like fear and anxiety, which tells you that the dog ate the grapes, you know.
Oh, that, I mean that's amazing. I think that's, you know, one of, so that's a great way to begin to wrap up our conversation, that, you know, it is, I think that's the practice, is, you know, I think, you know, if I think through all the themes of these podcasts, I think this is like number 41. You know, there are certain themes that come through in almost every conversation. Nature is a huge portal, a huge connector to intuition. And the other is that intuition is a practice, and it takes time and it takes attention, so that it becomes, you know, it's like, it's almost like that, like a pendulum. Like we do this thing in Koya sometimes where, like, it's called the priestess dance, right? So let me, if you just indulge me, I'll illustrate it. So basically, and it's kind of the same thing with intuition. So in the priestess dance, like, you start off as yourself and you kind of dance how you are in this moment. And then you move over, like you step out of yourself and into like the highest version of yourself, like this sort of like shaman, high priestess. And then you like dance around where you were, and like you make miracles happen, you insert magic, and like you dance around yourself, and you're just like channeling all this amazing stuff into you. And then you come back into yourself in the next part of the dance, and then you receive those gifts. So like you take on all the miracles, you dance the magic. And then you come out of yourself again, and you're back in the priestess, and you're as a priestess, you're doing things to make it stick, so that it's not just a dance you did on a, you know, a random, you know, Tuesday evening. Like, it's actually an experience where, like, you know, all of these miracles and magic are integrated into your body. And then we end the dance by like moving back and forth on one part of it, from like one leg, one swing back and forth from the right to the left, from yourself to the priestess, from yourself to the priestess, moving back and forth until that moment where you feel like they're one in the same, and then you dance that feeling. And that, I kind of, you know, I've never really realized that that's what we're kind of doing before, but that in that priestess dance, we're dancing with our intuition, with that higher knowledge. And actually, it's always there. It's always one and the same. But sometimes we get separated from it. Sometimes we put blockages in the way. Sometimes, you know, we just don't listen. We just don't connect. We don't dance with our inner wisdom, with our intuition, our priestess. But yet when we do, when we give ourselves the opportunity, it becomes that pendulum swinging back and forth between between, you know, intuition and every day gets like, you know, maybe we start in the practice and it's like, it feels like a massive swing side to side. But as we practice intuition, that, you know, that pendulum swing gets less and less until it's just one. And that's how, you know, and I think that, you know, tarot is such an amazing tool for that. That's like a daily thing that you can practice, that you can get a deck, borrow a deck, and you can practice choosing a card and listening to your intuition. And yeah. And so, sorry, that was a random story, but that felt like the right time to tell it. And so, Alice, would you, just two more questions. Is there anything from that place of intuition and highest wisdom from the priestess in you that you'd like to share as a way to finish up our conversation? Is there anything that you'd like to say that hasn't been said about intuition?
Well, I'm loving your analogy of the high priestess dance. And I think I'd just, you know, the way I teach tarot is to enable that within women, to enable that witchy inner understanding, and to give them permission to put aside all of the training that we've had since the moment we were born to appease other people, to fit into a quite dogmatic society, a patriarchal capitalist society that is so beyond our nature. And I guess I feel like tarot are a path amongst many spiritual paths, which you can combine to kind of recreate yourself, rebirth, be reborn, find that inner high priestess and that intuition. And it's like everything, it's a path. Some days you're there and some days you're not, but it's the more you do it, the more easy it comes before, you know, and then eventually, you know, most of your decisions are led by that kind of intuitive magic, except it doesn't feel like magic anymore. It feels like the grit and all the voices that are in your head that, you know, your mother, your teacher, your partner, what would the neighbor think? What would the people on the school run think? You know, all of those begin to ebb away as you recognize that what you think matters most, and that you have this quick connection that you can access and be really happy with the decisions you make. And that's been my path with tarot so far. So I would recommend them for that, for if nothing else than to understand who you are and what you think and how you feel and what you're going to do about it.
Alice, you're amazing. So how can people connect with you? What's the best way at this moment in time for people to connect with you about any and all of your offerings?
So I'm pretty active on Instagram, so come find me on Instagram, Alice Grist. So I do lots of little teeny mini readings on there. My website is alicegrist.co.uk. I have a blog on there talking about tarot. And I have my Cosmic Sisterhood is a paid membership, but there's also a free little mini version of it over on Facebook. So if people look up Cosmic Sisterhood, they can come get a glimpse of what goes on in my full sisterhood in that Facebook space. So everyone would be welcome in.
Oh, amazing. So you can find all the ways to connect with Alice in the show notes. And yeah, hopefully there might be some Koya Tarot collaborations in future, putting it out to the universe. That would be amazing. Alice, you are fantastic. I love being around you in your presence, and your wisdom is phenomenal. So thank you so much for sharing that with me and with everyone listening today. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Megan.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I hope it spoke to your heart and inspired you to connect to your own intuition. Check out the show notes for more information on the things discussed in this episode and details of how to connect with our amazing speaker. I would love to hear your feedback, and you can find me over at Koya with Megan on Instagram and on my website, meganfield.com. I would adore it if you would leave a review, and please don't forget to hit follow if you want the intuition conversations to automatically be on your phone every week. I can't wait to speak with you on the next episode.